Now, I have to warn you, some of this footage that you're about to see is clearly inappropriate for young viewers. Please ask your children to leave the room. And I'm serious. You really don't want your kids watching this.
Here we go. Another day, another fight. Here we go. It's the living sacrifice. Here we go. I get your bullshit weight. Here we go. I get your fucking pretend. Here we go. Another day, another hour. Here we go. Take the fight to power. Here we go. I'd rather die on my feet. Here we go. Than keep living on my knees.
All right, everybody, it's Friday night. Welcome to the Rogue Show. Big shout out to our kick-ass sponsors who bring the show to you folks every week. Clock Tower Pub, number one sports bar in all of Oregon. Man, multiple TVs, hot waitresses, cold beer, and plenty of live MMA. MMAMadhouse.com, you guys know how they do it, supporting local MMA. Check them out for all your local MMA news. Vision Smoke Shop and Glass Distribution, whether you need a piece for your pocket or you need to fill the shelves of your shop, hit them up. James and Vanessa are good folks. Clinch Custom Mouth Guards at GetClinched.com. Join the Army. Also, Greg at Ink Tank Tattoo. He does some kick-ass work. Anybody who follows me has seen it. Jax Media up at Jax Media Canada or JaxMedia.ca. They are amazing. Fighter profiles, T-shirts, banners, website design, whatever. Go Fight Live TV, Revolver MMA, RearNakedSmoke.net. Bitches, we're live. I know we got Carl the Madman with us, like always, Lapaki, my partner in crime, 516. Is this Jonathan?
What's going on, guys?
Hey, welcome. How you doing? Jonathan from the Clinch Report, everybody. Dude, it's Friday night, man. We're about to do this shit. Anybody else that's in the queues that wants to talk, you just press 1. We'll get you on live air. Jonathan, first time you ever been on the... Yeah, I don't know. They don't. They just want to listen. Jonathan, this is the first time you ever got to join us on the Rogue Show. Basically, how it goes is this is just open talk. You know, anything we want to talk about, feel free to jump in and voice your opinion because some people will keep talking, like myself. Straight up,
get used
I want
to. I hope you have a glass of water, Jonathan, because you'll talk a lot.
Yeah, I got a bottle of water. I'm good here.
Let's check this out. 857, who do we got?
Mike, what's up, guys?
Hey, Mike, how you doing tonight?
Not bad, and you guys?
We're living the dream. So far, we've got Jonathan from the Clinch Report, Lapaki from MMA Topics, and then me and Carl from MMA Madhouse. And it looks like we got MMA Beatdown about to join us as well. I want to start
off
tonight.
Is that 985?
Yeah, I believe that's... Yeah, I believe that's in that's Louisiana. I don't know. He's probably at work.
What's up?
Hey, Beatdown. Look at this. We got a great show.
Hey, I know y'all can't tell, but I got a ninja mask on right now.
Oh shit, let's go. We're gonna start with that. I'm gonna tell everybody right now and I'll throw the ball on the table. That was the biggest joke I ever fucking seen in MMA. It was horrible second-rate WWE shit tonight with Stephen Bonner and Tito Ortiz. It hurt Bellator.
Yeah, I gotta, you know, as much as I'm looking forward to that fight, I agree. Justin McCulley was relevant, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very, very shameful display on Bellator's part. I didn't think Scott Coker was going to be down to do stuff like that, but apparently he is.
And they're trying to pull Daniel Cormier and John Jones over there.
Okay, now look, does anybody feel that that was a smart move?
Dude, what about
for
having
them?
The guy come out with a fucking mask on, like this is fucking Paul
he
Bear
didn't,
watching
man, he didn't come out. He did not. He came out with two masks on.
Yeah.
Exactly, dude. What the fuck?
I mean, honestly, what's next? You're gonna have the Earl and Dave Hebner doing a switch in the middle of a match?
No, dude. I guarantee you. I would almost be willing to bet money that Bonner will hit Tito with the green mist like fucking the Great Muta.
Kabuki.
Have Ron McCarthy come out and hit John McCarthy with a chair. Take over as the ref and swing it in the other direction.
You got it. You guys got to admit, man, that was, I mean, that was some of the worst state. And look, if this is what we can expect from what I've said from day one is a pig with lipstick, I'm not fucking impressed. Dude, not at all.
Well, I mean, honestly, if you want my honest opinion, I think Scott Coker is learning the same lesson that Dana White learned before him and that Bjorn Rebney learned after, that the Viacom influence on Bellator and the Viacom influence on MMA, they want that they think MMA fans are wrestling fans. They think that, I'm not trying to call out wrestling fans, but most wrestling fans are younger kids.
Okay.
Most fans
okay.
are kids because it's fake. It's
fake. I understand.
Is it fake?
I understand.
Who said it's fake?
It's still real to me.
Look,
it might be fake. The thing about this, but the relationship is actually because, like, most MMA fans, I would say, are probably in their 28 to 38 range, and they made that transition of like watching pro wrestling, and then about the time they start to realize it was fake, all of a sudden here's like UFC 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rolling around when you're like 16, 17, 18, and you just made that easy transition. So, I mean, that, there's times where I can see the relationship, but, I mean, pulling a stunt like that in the middle of what is supposed to be a real combat sport, not a scripted event, just really
yeah,
puts the rest of your promotion in a very dangerous situation to be in, I think.
Yeah, it definitely to me. I mean, when the rivalry is real, when it's legitimate, and it takes on that pro wrestling, you know, shit talking back and forth, the way the
how do you think
Jones,
how do you
Cormier,
think the guys
think,
that fight for
that promotion
feel?
You know, it can be entertaining when it's like that, but when it's scripted like this, it's see through. It's very see through.
Look,
I'd be embarrassed to be another fighter on that promotion right now, whoever asked that question.
But now look,
I would be thoroughly embarrassed. I would be like, how the fuck do I get out of here? If I have to go out here and talk about some dude's ex-wife, like, I'm not down with that shit.
And let's
like,
be honest.
As crazy as Jenna Jameson might be, you don't need to be talking about her in the cage and shit like that. That's a place of respect.
But look.
Was there any chance that could have been organically just him talking shit, though? Is there any chance that wasn't written in the back and it was just bad taste? Because if it was just bad taste, then now we got two idiots on the microphone that can't talk shit. To me, it looks like he's
trying
to pretend to be Chael Sonnen, and he's not.
If he wouldn't have walked out there with a guy with two fucking masks on, I would think it was organic. But when you have a guy out there beside you looking like Kane in, like, 1997... Then, you know, like, I was expecting to see, like, Dr. Isaac Yankum or some shit, like, you know, from underneath the mask. Like, I didn't know what the fuck was going to go on.
Hey, now,
there's no way that whole thing wasn't scripted and planned out. Like, they probably sat in the back and worked it out exactly. I mean,
the mask didn't even fit.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
he would have been better off with pantyhose on his fucking head.
Here's the real shit part of this whole deal, okay? This joke show they put on took away from a title fight where a title changed hands. Nobody's talking about it, so it did. It did not.
And what a great fight that was!
Fuck yeah!
Hey, I'm watching it right now, and Patricio piecing him up in the first and second round.
Dude,
nice.
Dude.
Yeah. His hands were on point tonight.
I mean,
okay.
I thought that, but here's my other beef with Bellator. What the fuck is it with having dark matches? Why is Mike Musatelli not fighting on the televised portion of this event?
Well, I mean, that's a programming issue, I think. I don't know if that's
they
really...
They own the network! I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to be like, sorry, bro, we're going to take however much time we need, and then we'll roll into the next programming. It's not like I own the network and they're like, hey, man, we got a few extra fights. What are you going to do? I'm going to probably be like, well, you know, it costs you a little extra money. They own the network. They're like, they're such bums. They're costing these fighters sponsorship money because if I'm a sponsor and you tell me you're going to be on TV and we negotiate a price and then you're not on TV, man, well, come on. We got to renegotiate the price now.
Well, you know, in all fairness, the blank check's just been signed. So let's see what happens with Coker, if he can do something with it. And, you know, if they have to do these stupid little, you know, maybe it does grab fans, this stupid little WWE nonsense, and it makes us all look stupid. It's very possible. But, you know, to us, I think it's pretty clear to the fans that are in the know, to the diehards, we don't want this shit involved with our sport.
I don't know. But in a way, I think it will grab fans either way because they've been promoting it on TNA with fucking Bobby Lashley over there as champion. So it's like either way they're promoting the Bellator event and vice versa. Bellator's pretty much promoting TNA with Lashley and fucking all these other joke fighters like Batista, and it's just a joke.
Yeah, did they even mention the fact that Tito Bonner is the undercard for Chandler Brooks?
No.
Yeah, there's a title fight on that one that they didn't even mention, so it's kind of ridiculous.
And hey, why is that now for the vacant lightweight title? Because didn't Brooks win the interim title from Chandler when Alvarez pulled out of the pay-per-view or whatever?
Yeah, and then Alvarez left to UFC, so it should be Brooks as champion, but Bellator is just all fucked up.
But instead it's going to be for the vacant title?
Yes, I think it's going to be for the Michael Chandler title. Boy, do they really want him to have the belt.
Man. And you know what's sad is I think he would probably be pretty good. I used to think he might be like a number 4 to 6, but I'm thinking he's probably more somewhere like 9 to 11 right now.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, Brooks
is no joke, man. Yeah, I actually think Chandler won that fight. I did not have a 10-8 round. I think that was ridiculous in that fight. But, yeah, I think Chandler's top 7 in the world.
No way. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, he's right in there, man. I definitely believe that. But now what do people think? I don't think that – I think Cerrone has a really good chance of beating Alvarez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I see Cerrone landing with the head kick. I think Alvarez is susceptible to the head kick.
If Cerrone comes in there and gets just demolishes him, first of all, you got to say, wow, he's overrated. But second of all, who do you put him against to see where he really belongs? I mean, I think he should have come in against it like a Miller, you know, somebody like that to test themselves before Cerrone. But they think he's ready to be in the mix. I think Cerrone's more than he can handle.
If he was to lose, I'd love to see the UFC reach an agreement with Nate and Nate come and fight him.
Oh,
I'd love to see Nate and Alvarez. I think that would be a sick fight.
Nate Diaz?
Yeah.
I think if he wins, he gets Nate Diaz. I think if he wins, he gets Diaz.
But Diaz hasn't been around in a while, and it's not like he's done anything. His last fight, who did he fight? His last fight, was it against Henderson or no?
Or the KO from Thompson, right?
Oh, yeah.
The point, yeah.
So it's like he's coming off of 2 losses.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Thompson fight, he got systematically owned.
Demolished. But what do you guys rank him at then?
I have him between now off the 2 losses.
I'd still say top 10.
No, I have him cracking the 15, but not top 10.
Oh, man. What did you guys think?
I had him at about
eight through 10,
somewhere floating in 8 through 10.
It's just hard to give a guy.
title contender.
It's hard to give a guy like that some sort of ranking when you got guys like Bobby Green and guys that are kicking ass and winning, and they're not even ranked yet. So.
Yeah, that was crazy. I couldn't believe that Thompson and Green, but...
Yeah, Bobby Green's no joke.
Yeah,
you can't keep on that kid.
Most of these guys that get to vote, most of these guys that get to vote on the rankings are buffoons. They're absolute idiots. They don't know what the hell's going on. Like, there's no way that Kaisa or Lauzon should lose any ground tonight in any kind of ranking.
Oh, that was
a
sick fight.
There are rankings? Didn't Joe Soto just fight for the title? There are rankings? Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. What rankings, dude? I can show you the Twitter because Jail Sonnen doesn't follow anyone, so every time he sends me something, he sends it to direct message, and I can't respond to it. So all the correspondence I have with Jail Sonnen is one sided, but it's pretty funny. I still have it. You can see it, And he even said to me when I was like, dude, you're not ranked. How are you fighting for the title? And he's like, you don't make the rankings. Uncle Dana makes the rankings. We have to live with it. And that's what he wrote.
Hey, where's Thiago?
What's that?
Thiago Silva. He's back.
If you think Thiago Silva, if you don't think that was planned out weeks and weeks and weeks ago, and that Thiago Silva's wife got a nice check in Brazil just to stay there and not press charges, so everything would go away, so he could re-sign with the UFC.
I said that too. He's worth a lot more fucking money sitting on the street fighting than he is in prison. And by the way, I want to give a big shout-out to Hewitt just now for knocking the holy shit out of Jansen up at Havoc Fighting Championship 6. This guy's still in another fucking day. He got knocked the fuck out. But, yeah, I agree. His ex-wife is like, dude, if you're in prison, I don't get money out of your ass. You need to be fighting so I can get paid.
She's back in Brazil. She was banging Pablo Popovich, for crying out loud, you know? So that's that whole thing. There's crazy shit that was going on down there, and supposedly
I'm not saying
what
nothing
happened
bad.
Was,
he liable to show up at the gym.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. He showed up at Pablo Popovich's gym. I mean,
that's what I said. I'm not saying anything. He might have show up at the gym and shoot me up.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, dude. How do you get a resisting arrest with no violence charge, but still are on the receiving end of a taser?
Hey, okay, look, we've been talking about...
If you're resisting arrest and you're nonviolent, how are you resisting arrest?
It's kind of simple. If there's no complainant, then there is no crime. And with this, there is no complainant because she left the country and she's being combative.
No face, no case, that's how it works.
Yeah. So, and what this is, exactly what this is I'm not saying guarantee, but I'm pretty sure... Glenn Robinson and his people, who represent Thiago Silva, reached out to Pai Silva and said, if you want anything, be smart about it and let's do it this way so he can go back to the UFC. But that's the thing that gets me is now the UFC's let him back in saying, yeah, he's not guilty of anything. Well, everything that was said about him that happened in the press is true. He's not disputing any of it. He's just not guilty of any crime because there's no charge. But he did hold a knife to a woman's throat. He did have to get tased, and he did bring a gun to a gym. And the UFC is still allowing this guy back in. To me,
they won't let Paul Daly back, though.
Oh, yeah, because he threw a punch after the bell.
Yeah, but still, man, he's a good fighter. I think they should give him another chance.
Absolutely,
Paul Daly
should
be in the UFC long ago.
Well, then give Paul Daly another chance.
That's what I'm saying.
Paul Daly's number one fan from Texas.
The reason Paul Daly's not in the UFC. The reason Paul Daly's not in the UFC is the same reason that Ben Askren's not in the UFC. You don't talk bad about Santa Claus and then expect an invite to the North Pole.
They're already saying that Ben Askren might get back in or might get in.
Dude, Ben Askren getting in. He ain't getting in anytime soon. He's got a long
time. Dude, why would you?
He's going to make so much more money in Asia than he will in the UFC. Why would you go? What the fuck? Why would you take a pay cut to go to the UFC? Fuck that. I ain't taking a pay cut to go get punched in the fucking face by anybody.
Hey,
yeah, I don't know. The long term goal is, I mean, how many fighters do you guys know that own gyms or run gyms, and they're like, oh, yeah, he's run by a former UFC fighter. And you're like, wait a minute, who? And then you look it up, and he fought once, like, on the undercard of the fight for the troops and got knocked out. You're like, wait a minute, what? If you fight in the UFC, you can own a gym and say that you were a former UFC fighter, you know, and the long-term profit and potential's there. And for Askren, he can't do
that. Any Paul Daly fan or any, not just Paul Daly, but since somebody bought him up, you would be angry that, I mean, yeah, he effed up really, really bad. He did one of the stupidest, if not the stupidest thing that you could possibly do. Probably the stupidest thing. But he's been wasting his prime for I don't know how many years now. And it's just unfortunate. And they keep doing this ping pong bullshit about, he might be back, he might not, and he signs with Bama. And I like Bama. I record Bama every time it's on because I'm never home. But it's unfortunate that people are wasting their prime when they're true competitors. Someone like Ben Askren, someone like Paul Daly, they might not win every fight, but they would be true competitors. They could at least make a wave. They could at least make people talk. And, yeah, they might not win every time. They might not be. They're not going to be George St. Pierre, probably. But they could at least, you know, make people talk and make waves and win some fights or at least have exciting fights. And it's unfortunate that they might be seen as wasting their prime, which is what Paul Daly, someone like Paul Daly, is doing to me. And I'm a huge, huge Paul Daly fan. And, yeah, he effed up really, really bad, and that was stupid. And I can't believe he did that.
Well, look, since we're sitting here kind of talking about the whole UFC making choices as they choose to fit their agenda and not what's maybe best for the sport, a buddy of mine threw this out earlier tonight. What's the deal with Spokane fighters in the UFC getting screwed consistently no matter where they fight? Anybody here have an opinion on that? Like tonight's fight getting stopped, obviously the Phillips fights, you know, the bullshit there, what was it, in Mukau or whatever, some of the stuff that, you know, Sam's had to put up with on, you know, on short notice fights consistently. I mean, does anybody feel like that group's getting a raw deal, even though they've produced some of the best fighters going today?
I don't know, man.
I don't know too much about that either.
The chance to fight tonight,
I think that was a good stoppage. That cut was a gash, man.
Which fight was that?
Joe Lauzon's fight with Jim Miller. And, I mean, tell me how that fight wasn't stopped, but this fight was. And then look at the judging in Elizabeth Phillips fights. I mean, I've had her win in both of those fights. I don't really care what Dana says about that fight with her and the Russian girl, but, I mean, I thought pretty clearly Elizabeth won both of those fights, and she was on the wrong end of judging both times. And then Sam kind of gets jerked around a lot.
Get angry at the UFC Ultimate Fighting Championship for a lot of things, but I don't think they have much of a hand in that kind of thing. I think a lot of it is just unfortunate things happening, and a lot of please don't get me wrong. There's a lot of things to get mad at them about. I don't think that that's one of them, though.
We have to remember one thing. You know, in boxing, you get a standing eight count, you get several knockdowns, several chances. The referee can make a few mistakes, and the fighter can still get to continue. And in mixed martial arts, until the rules are changed, when you are clearly no longer intelligently defending yourself, the fight is over. If it's an instant or if it's 20 seconds that you're out. I've seen, Skippy and I have talked about this on his other show, we've seen I can count probably 100 fighters that I've seen knocked out and get knocked back in from the gambit.
Yeah.
If that happens, the fight is over. You are out. That is the rule of the game. If you tap, it's over. It's not like I was only tapping for a few seconds. Okay, let me out. I want to fight again. Come on, dude. That's not the way the game goes. If it's over, it's over. And these referees, they don't get the benefit of a standing eight count. They don't get the benefit of a three knockdown rule to make a bad decision on whether a guy's too damaged for his own good to continue. So guys like Big John McCarthy, Herb Dean, they've been to more fights than you guys and I have seen put together. If they see a guy's eyes roll in the back of the head, who are we to argue? The problem that I have is that we as MMA fans and most MMA fans in general is we tend to judge the referees and the judges the same way that we do boxing. And that's not fair because the referees in boxing and the referees in MMA are completely different. There's no chance for a mistake in MMA. And referees in boxing, they get the standing eight count, they get the three knockdown rule. You've seen a fighter get knocked down 10, 12 times in a fight and still continue. You don't see that in MMA. When the damage is complete, the fight's over.
Well, I think we can go back to like that gentleman said, hundreds of fights. I mean, just pointing one out off the top of my head, and it might not be, it probably isn't the best example, but who thinks that the Ben Henderson fight was stopped early?
He was out cold.
He was out.
His leg was curled up behind him. He went temporarily out cold, right. It was stank leg.
That's what I'm saying, though. In MMA fights, they get knocked down, and sometimes, I mean, you can see, like, Chuck Ongo and Pat Barry. That's just a thing. In that case,
the referee wasn't able to get in and stop it in time, and the fight continued. Herb actually pulled back on that one. And that can happen. If that happens, that happens. But
hey guys,
in that case, John saw his eyes roll in the back of his head and stopped the fight.
Hold on a second. Jeff from Clinch Custom Mouth Guards, you're live, right, buddy?
Okay.
Hey, look, you're a referee for MMA and have done lots and lots of fights. What is your take on this?
Well, you didn't kick all of us sick because I just delivered somebody's mouth guard. But now I'm here, and I think I get what you're talking about. Why don't I listen for a minute until I'm sure what you're talking about so I don't sound like an idiot? Or just tell me.
Okay.
Well, okay, to get back to it, what do you guys think? What about the fucking Faber-Barral fight, dude? Since Faber was still giving a thumbs up when they stopped the fight.
See, that's what we're, you know, this is definitely...
Hold on a second. And this, the gentleman on the phone's a referee, so maybe he can tell me. Where in the rule book does it say that giving a thumbs up is intelligent form of defense? Because that was the argument. That was the argument there. The referee was saying, defend yourself, defend yourself, defend yourself, and he shoots him a thumbs up. Hey, buddy!
No, he was doing it to show him that he was okay. He was still defending himself
in
a way.
He wasn't. If you watch, and if you've ever been backstage at a fight and you've heard a rule meeting, when a referee says, when I say to you, defend yourself, I'm not asking you if you're okay. I'm telling you, defend yourself, because to me, you're not defending yourself. So defend yourself means defend yourself. That doesn't mean tell me I'm okay. Reassure me that not to stop the fight. I'm giving you an order to defend yourself. And if you don't do it, I'm going to stop the fight.
I don't tell him to defend yourself. I think that's coaching.
Jeff, if a guy is, let's say a guy's in a guillotine and he throws a thumbs up and you're telling him, you know, you're trying to check, are you, you know, defend yourself, he's just sitting there and he throws a thumbs up. Will you continue the fight or will you go ahead
and stop?
That's
a little different, though.
I don't say defend yourself. I don't do that because I think that's coaching the fighters. It's telling one guy that if he just pours it on right now, I'm going to stop it. So I don't do that. I would say, like, make something happen. You better do something, make something happen. So I'm not talking to them specifically, and they get the idea that something should happen.
A guillotine's different, though.
Get rid of the guillotine. You have him turtled up against the cage. You have him turtled up against the cage, his head down, and he's eating hammer fists from a bottom position. And you say, show me something, show me something, show me something, and he shoots you a thumbs up.
Then I'm letting
him
go.
And he's still getting hammer fists.
Then I'm letting him fight. If he has to tell me that he's okay, then he's finished. I mean, at the same time, he's going to have to not be taking every shot. He's got to be getting out
exactly.
of the way, not
okay, can I ask something to him?
Exactly.
Go ahead and do something at that point. They can give the thumbs up. They're usually not that hurt yet.
Exactly.
Sometimes a bunch of later they're hurt, but I let fights go a long ways. I'm not someone who stops fights early almost ever. I don't think I've ever been accused of it maybe one time. And that person the next day had a broken face, so they thanked me. But I don't like fights to be stopped. I don't want to be a part of their decision. So I let guys fight out of bad positions a lot. And it makes a big difference in the outcome of the fight. A lot of fights where
it's like that other gentleman was saying, like with MMA, it's so different because you don't have that standing eight count. You have that literally split second to tell, is this guy okay or can he get up? And if he just...
I don't really have a split second. I have as many seconds as I want. I mean, if I'm paying attention and following the fight and doing my job, then my second started when the round started. I mean, things don't really go that quick very often.
I don't know. I mean,
it seems like it goes fast when you're watching it, but when you're in there, you see it progressing. You see someone getting the edge. You can see a lot more when you're in there, especially I fought before, so I can see when they're seriously in trouble and when they're just fighting, you know?
Okay,
so
but
when they're
there's
hurt,
always
going to
be things like where a guy gets knocked back into consciousness, gets knocked back.
All the time.
Okay, so how do you, what I'm asking is how do you specify that in a split second or a split whatever? You say you have extra time, which I'm not disputing, but I'm saying how do you specify one or the other? Like, okay, this guy is okay, or okay, this guy was knocked the fuck out, but he's okay now because he got punched back into a couple more times, so he's standing up now. Because
if they're knocked out, a real good knockout, then he won't wake back up. If it's a flash, then just hit the ground. You'll just... It's not even that you're out so much. It's just a flash knockout. I don't know if you've ever fought before, but it's not like getting knocked out. It should have been both, and getting knocked out is horrible. And the flash is just like, it's almost like a stinger or something. It's not that big a deal. It pop right back. So if I can get to it before, like if they go down and then they take shots down, they can take like one shot down or two shots down, and then I'm jumping in. But I'll let him take a shot or two, and I tell him in the rules meeting. I'm not somebody who's going to
talk to him. The refs are always not going to get it right, though.
What's that?
It happens. I mean, he's not. The ref's not going to get it right every time. You know. I mean, there's always going to be I'd rather him stop it than say, "Oh man, maybe I should have stopped it."
Yeah. Sometimes I don't know. It's fine. I can't think of a time when I thought. Oh no! One time in a girl fight, because I couldn't believe that the girl was actually knocked out. That one I thought I should have probably jumped in there quicker, but I couldn't believe she was knocked out. They're only 115 pounds, but she was out. And then I had to take a few months off. So that was probably the time when I should have stopped it. But for the most part, the junior doesn't become an issue in MMA. And what you do would be nice to have with boxing mats and have the chance to make mistakes and correct them. That'd be pretty cool. But like you say, it's over. And I've had situations where I stopped the fight. I can think of two different times when I shouldn't have stopped the fight. They were super pissed off, understandably, but I couldn't tell. To me, one of them they tapped, and the other one, he was moving. So I stopped it, but they were super pissed off, and I should have stopped it. But we make the
radio.
Yeah.
Everybody don't think it wants. Jesus, criminy. What the fuck?
All right. So we want to change the subject now?
Yeah, actually, I got a subject. I'm curious everybody's opinion.
Oh, yeah, go figure. When don't you have
Let's
a
Let's find it out.
Who's got a computer on or something?
I got it.
Okay.
More.
Look, I just found out tonight what everybody speculated is true, that the XFC is pretty much done in America, and they've moved everything to South America. What do you
really?
Guys think about that? They've been releasing all their top-tier talent left and right. And they're moving only the Brazilian fighters down there, and they're going to hold an MMA tournament and have maybe the finals in America next year. What do you guys think about a U.S. promotion like that shutting down and moving down to South America? Do you think it's a smart thing because the money's better there?
There's no such thing as a U.S. promotion. It has to do with having a TV deal. And when your
True.
TV deal is Brazilian TV, then, I mean, if UFC won, if someone went to Art Davey and those guys from Telemundo and said, hey, we'll put you on, oh, como esta, UFC, that shit would have been on Telemundo if they came with the money. You know what I mean? UFC Mexico would have been like friggin', it would have been like, maybe we should do UFC USA. You know, so
that's part of the deal,
and that's the problem that guys like Bama Brett from Bama USA are having. You know, if these promotions, it's very difficult for a promotion to make money on ticket sales without the backing of a TV deal, and the TV deal is what makes the money. So where TV talks, everyone walks.
Now that's something that a lot of people might not know, but we do because we've heard from the horse's mouth, but the last two U.S. events each lost about $50,000 to $70,000, depending on which event. Now, every event in Brazil has been profitable from the gate alone, let alone the TV contract. You know, do you think we will see more promotions that have built their name here in the States go to South America where they can get a better TV deal?
Well, I think it helps that the new owners are based out of South America originally, too, plus. But, I mean, dude, they also have less overhead down there, dude. There's no commission. Who the hell are they paying? They rent the fucking little arena out, and that's it. They're like, fuck it, we'll sanction ourselves. Okay.
Yeah, I'm also curious how many of their roster would actually pass a drug test, but, you know, so that's another thing that they can get away with down there is the commission don't, you know. That's why Dana White changed judges at the friggin' event.
Does anybody know how the... I'm not sure. My terminology is not the best because I'm not sure. I know what I'm talking about, but not from a terminology standpoint. From the Brazil... I don't know if any of you guys have had been involved in a promotion from Brazil, but how is the drug testing there? Is it non-existent? Is it just less strenuous? Is it?
Well, I know that when the UFC goes to Brazil, they're in charge of drug testing.
Right,
so,
and when you're in charge of it and not the commission itself.
Well, the UFC
just...
has pretty strict drug testing, but that's the UFC. So
do they
recently? No, they've had pretty strict drug testing for a while as far as competitors. The UFC's been lacking where they're lacking and still lacking is out of competition testing for fighters. And you see, if you look back at the UFC's history of fighters that piss test pop hot, a lot of them are late minute replacements. You know what I mean? Because they just didn't have the time to get it out of their system. Like Stephen Bonner, perfect example. Stephen Bonner.
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah,
I think promotions like the XFC would probably have to hire an outside company to handle the drug test if the Brazilian Commission mandated, and if so, you know they're going to go with the cheapest of the ones available because they got to save money. So.
What about Alistair Overeem?
Hush, we're not talking about that.
Yeah,
it's
that's
over.
A joke.
You bring up steroids, I'm just saying.
Dude,
it's
just
over.
Because somebody says
it's over,
bro.
Reem. Alistair Overeem will be fighting Chuck Congo in November in Bellator.
Hey, I said that tonight. I just said that tonight. I said,
my bet tonight.
Or Bobby Lashley.
He shouldn't be cut.
Both great fights. Dude, he should
he
be
shouldn't
cut.
Shouldn't be cut.
And I love Aleister.
The guy makes $264,000. What do you mean he shouldn't be cut?
He shouldn't be cut, or he shouldn't take a pay cut. Those are two way, way different things.
He can't take a pay cut. He's got a contract.
I don't think he should be cut.
No, he's done. He's done skis, dude.
I don't know. After tonight, dude, like the Travis Brown fight, he looked good.
But tonight, he looked like shit, dude. He looked horrible.
He
he's
looked
done.
Like trash, but I don't.
He
think
wasn't throwing no fucking punches, dude. He had some hip. He had some nice kicks, but no fucking punches. I don't know what was going on with him.
He can't. He's Listen, he's a big, strong, heavy striker, and I'm not trying to put a guy down when he's had a bad day, but he cannot take a punch. He cannot.
Get a blast off.
Dude, in the heavyweight division, that's a real bad trait to have. You know what I mean? You could be slow in the heavyweight division. You could have bad ground and pound, or you could have bad submissions. But one thing you don't want to have in the heavyweight division is a suspect chin. Because the chin
his chin is O.J. Simpson right now. As suspect as can be.
Yeah.
Hey, look. Straight up. Look, I'm the
as
first
weak
one.
As the heavyweight division is right now, though,
yeah,
in the
but,
UFC
look,
especially,
no.
I don't think he should be cut. And
he should,
and part of that is the fan talking.
He should be on his way to Bellator for sure. I don't see him fighting again in the UFC.
Where
he
even
gets paid too much. He gets paid too much, and they don't. You know, they'll drop him easily. Plus,
you know
he's got all this.
Be a good fight? You know what would be a good fight for him? Pat Barry.
Oh God.
Yeah.
No.
But he
and neither one
no.
of those guys deserve to be in the UFC. I'm sorry.
That'd be a double knockout. That'd be a double knockout
yes.
right there. I mean,
neither one
for?
Of them. But that's the type. That's if you were to give Alistair Overeem a number for like a video game, like wow, he's like 96 or he's like a 77. He would be right on the same level as Pat Barry, like 74 for the heavyweight division.
Now look,
looking like a 96, but showing up like a 74.
And we know he can't go back to kickboxing with that chin. I mean, damn.
No, but what that's he can do is he can go down to Jackson's and become a striking coach for the heavyweight guys because
no
he
way.
Is a great striker. He is a great striker.
No one at Jackson's even likes him right now.
It
dude,
doesn't
like,
fucking matter.
Have you?
It
no
doesn't
way.
Matter. He can go somewhere. He can go back to glory.
He doesn't have had to be a coach.
He needs to figure it out because his career is done. And
oh,
look, I've loved Alistair since he was
out.
205, you know, back in the day. I mean, it's just, it's done. He's done. His career is over. It's sad to say, but look, sometimes you got
to
hang
if
him up.
If he moves to 205, he'll stay in the UFC. If he stays at heavyweight, he's gone. That's the bottom line.
How the hell is he in the 205, though?
The 205 can sell him at trying something different.
He goes
well,
to
yeah,
205. I mean, he's got a shot.
He'll get on a mix of Winnie Tabs and Clenbuterol for like 9 months and just do a whole lot of running, and he'll drop the weight, and then, you know, he'll be ready to fight at 205.
He's got to cut a leg off to make 205.
At this point, I'd give Cerrone the edge over those two in the fight.
Cerrone's a beast.
Well, I'll tell you, It was very sad to see him because I thought he was doing really well with those leg kicks, working that lead leg. I was super excited to see what his cardio looked like. But I'll tell you right now, I mean, I don't even think he's Bellator, let alone World Series. I think it's just time. Look, he had multiple fucking titles. He had multiple titles in multiple organizations and multiple combat sport platforms. Fuck it. Hang it up.
Yeah,
right,
but he's only 34 years old. It's not like
you're a promoter. What are you willing to pay a guy like Alistair Overeem to headline one year, maybe an XFC or a regional fight? You know, what do you think a guy like Alistair Overeem can bring as far as money-wise to make a salary worth it? To me, I don't see anyone paying him more than 20, 30 grand. You know,
yes,
like to
wow.
like Baroni type money to fight anywhere.
I see him possibly going to 1FC and making $25,000 a fight to fight in the heavyweight division. But other than that, because he's a star in Asia, he's a huge star
in
Asia.
Do they even have a heavyweight division?
Yep, they do. Jeff
from
Punch Custom Mouth Guards sponsors one of the fighters over there. Hold on. I know he's driving, but we're going to unmute him. Yeah, Jeff. He's a heavyweight, right?
Yeah, Paul Chang.
Paul Chang is the heavyweight at 1FC, yeah.
And yeah. What's his name's over there? That guy that's talked all this shit. That's who he's supposed to fight next. They got a few heavyweights. They got a heavyweight class. They got a heavyweight champion person. McSweeney's in there. He's at 1FC heavyweight.
Well, I don't want to eat my words then, because maybe 1FC is the type of organization that could actually pay a fighter like Overeem and actually get something out of him, especially if it's in Japan. I know Overeem's still got a huge following there. So,
yep.
20 or 30 grand, that was a joke. I'm sorry.
But, I mean, have you guys seen his paychecks? His paychecks are like $245,187.93. They're like the most ridiculous UFC paychecks ever, and it's because of the whole Golden Glory structure that he was signed to originally. But he makes $200,000 to get knocked out against a guy who makes $60,000. So I don't see him sticking around.
No, I don't either. And you
I
know
do.
What I mean. The thing that I was the most disappointed in is I really expected to get a good tweet from Rumble Johnson tonight after the knockout, and he was really didn't say anything.
Well, the best thing about that whole fight was Ben Rotwell's dance after the fight.
That was something. That was very Mark Madsen like. You remember when Mark Madsen did the dance and the Lakers won the?
Yeah, that was disgusting. I tried to forget about that.
Yeah, this was pretty bad. That was almost as bad. They should have rules that guys that have body hair, wall-to-wall carpet, are not allowed to dance.
If Overeem the funny thing is, if Overeem danced
after
he knocked somebody out, he would be getting trashed. He gets trashed for everything.
It was, I was a little shocked that he hit him on top of the head, too. It wasn't like he caught his temple or his jaw or his chin. Maybe I missed the shot before it, but the shot that knocked him down was on literally on top of his head.
Yeah, it was.
Right at the crest above the ear.
Dude, my wife asked him, she goes, my wife goes, can you punch somebody in the brain like that legally?
If there wasn't a shot beforehand that did the damage, if it was just that,
what a bullshit disqualification.
No, I mean, if it was just that shot, it's kind of hard to imagine him taking any punch as a heavyweight. Can't take one.
Well,
to the...
I still really think it was the uppercut is what really he never recovered from. I mean, that was pretty blatant.
That's when
his leg was
bad. That's when I thought
hurt
his leg.
He looked like he was on ice skates. I don't think he ever recovered from that. It was just a matter of time.
It's things like that where I feel like Ben Askren wouldn't make it in the UFC, too, because it's like guys like Overeem, guys like Fedor, for example, that are fucking all-stars, guys you want to consider pound-for-pound fighters. When they come to big organizations with real competitors, look what happens.
Yeah, but I think the difference between them and Askren is that Askren's still in his prime, and Fedor was way past his prime by the time that Dana would even consider bringing him to the UFC.
Yeah, but
Alistair's
still, in Strikeforce,
really been out of his prime. You know,
in Strikeforce, everyone was still over Fedor. Fedor got that first loss in Strikeforce, everyone was still considering Fedor as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters.
Oh, I don't think Fedor was ever out of the best pound-for-pound fighter. I don't think he ever was. I think up until the day he left, he was still in it. In my eyes, boys, I may be wrong here, but I'm just a dumb American wrestler, and you don't get any better at dumb American wrestling than Ben Askren. And in my eyes, Ben Askren is 100% a contender in the UFC the moment he signs that contract. He's not a pretender. He's a 100% contender.
Yeah,
UFC.
But that's the only reason he'll sign
a
contract.
Is Ben Askren a better wrestler than Kyle Dake?
Is
Ben Askren a better wrestler than Kyle Dake?
Than Kyle
who? The kid that went to Cornell. Four-time national championship, Dake.
He
was supposed to wrestle Ben at the last.
Put it this way, Ben Askren was Michael Chandler and King Mo's coach at Mizzou. He was their coach. The year he graduated,
became the wrestling coach. King Mo went to Oklahoma State. King Mo went to Oklahoma State.
Not King Mo. I'm sorry. Was it Woodley? T. Woodley. Woodley, then. One of the guys. Traded with Chandler
and
would come on the side when we got him.
Too, right?
But he's a beast. He's an absolute 100% beast. And the people that don't realize that, you know, a lot of people talk about Ben Askren coming from the they're basing it on what they see on Sherdog, but he is a TKO smashing machine. He's not just to sit on you and sponge you and smother you. He will smash your face. That's what he does best now.
He's changed in the last 3 or 4 fights because there was a few fight run there where Ben was very boring.
He has
flipped the switch his last 2 or 3 or 4 fights. I can't remember the. I'm really comfortable saying 3, but maybe 4 fights.
Yeah, well, he's starting to challenge himself with that striking, and he can freaking drop bombs, dude. That guy's, you know. I'm not the type of person that really likes that kind of brash. I like the more quiet guys, like the guys like Chandler and Pat Kern. I like those types of fighters. He's a little too brash for my taste, but he's definitely, when you have that kind of pedigree and you've been able to transition to a sport as well as he has, you can't sleep on that. He has game-changing wrestling. Game-changing wrestling.
Now, let me throw this out to you guys. If he goes down like a Tony Lopez and never fought in the UFC, can you still look at his, you know, and consider him one of the best in his weight class?
Never, ever. You can't because he's not fighting top 10 fighters.
So if Eddie Alvarez comes in and loses, he's never going to be a top 10 all-time lightweight?
No,
I
don't know. I don't know. It depends on how you look at it. I see it as if you're going to go down as a top 10, you're going to have to fight fighters that are actually ranked. And he's not. Mm-hmm. He's not. It's simple as that. If you don't come to UFC, you're not fighting the best in the division. That's where the best are. And that's where he's choosing not to go.
Well, guys, we're only a couple weeks away from only having 40 fighters in the division, so it's kind of tough to say all-time top 10. The sport's still growing, and it's still young. But as far as what Alvarez has done, he's held one title in one organization, and he held it twice. He hasn't really beat a lot of great names. He beat Michael Chandler in a split decision in a fight that he lost. I was there. I watched it. But I think he's good. I don't think he's top 10. And I think that you guys are going to see that when Cerrone kicks his head off.
And we're talking about lightweight. We're talking about guys where fucking, if you're talking about all time already, it's like, look at guys like BJ Penn and there's a bunch of names you could throw out there that are all time.
But do you think
Alvarez. Well, you can't put him on the same level that you could put BJ Penn on. I don't think you'll ever be able to.
Well, see, here's the thing.
But then let's look at a guy like Gilbert Melendez, who just came to the UFC. If he'd have never came to the UFC, there's no way you can argue he's not he was arguably the best lightweight on the planet for 2 years, even when he was at Strikeforce, and unfortunately fighting worse competition.
In Strikeforce, he actually had competition there, too, though. He had guys like KJ Nunes, but KJ Nunes was actually a nice fighter when he was a decent fighter, and he had other guys there that were good fighters. Diaz was there.
If you're going to have a top all-time fighter, then he's got to have names that he's beat behind him, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you're gonna have, like, some sort of distinction where, you know, top 10 lightweight of all time, but in a sport like I'm saying that's still growing, it's kind of hard to get because look at a guy like Jens Pulver. A guy like Jens Pulver who won the title. Jens Pulver would not last in a King of the Cage organization today because with his skill that he started out with. He was a bruiser. He didn't have any particular – he wasn't a mixed martial artist when he started out. He was a bruiser in a burgeoning weight class, and he took advantage of that and did really well. But look what happened when the sport passed him by.
If Lawler wins the title, you got to talk about him being one of the top 10 in that weight class for what he's done, the ups and downs, and to come back. And honestly, I felt he won the first fight. I think he'll win the second one and finish it. But if he wins, you got to start talking about that guy being the top 10.
Yeah. I mean, you got to talk about Robbie Lawler being a Hall of Famer if he wins that fight, first of all. Because everyone keeps forgetting, Robbie Lawler started Miletich Fighting Systems back in Bettendorf, Iowa. When there was a fighting camp in Bettendorf, Iowa, which there hasn't been for years, you know what I mean? That dude, I saw him fighting Babalu Sobral for crying out loud at 185.
Yeah.
So,
well, think about,
you know,
that's where Rothwell, didn't Rothwell originally start with Miletich back there? Because that's when he made his break onto IFL.
Yep.
Yeah,
but I'm almost positive that he originally made his break into the IFL with Miletich Fighting Systems back when there was him and Sylvia and those other fucking guys. Rory Markham was there then. That I think a lot of people have forgot about. Rory Markham, man, that guy was a lot of fun to watch fight.
So would you – look, you just threw out some old-school names. Would anybody here say that Sakuraba should be considered as a great as well?
Hall of Famer, maybe, but not a particular great in any weight class.
Okay.
Depends. If you mean great as in top five, top ten, probably not. But if you mean great as in someone who helped possibly solidify the sport or solidify, like, then, yeah, but not – kind of like someone said with, like, Jens Pulver. He's recognizable, but he's not top 5, top 10 great.
Jens Pulver.
What do you guys, here's one I'll throw out.
Pulver.
I'll throw this one out, and this guy's a little close to my heart because I'm kind of friends with him, so be gentle if you're going to get crazy. But what do you think about a guy like Phil Baroni?
Phil's a gangster.
Come on.
I mean, you can't say he's a top 10 in any weight class, but you gotta at least say consider him for some sort of Hall of Fame. I mean, the guy is a legend in MMA, you know. So that's what I'm saying. It's kind of
close. Dude, I remember when Phil like first was walking out with the sunglasses and the fucking leather jacket, and he was just like, he was just like a fucking UFC version of Razor fucking Ramon, man.
He looked like fucking Buff Bagwell over there.
Bagwell.
One star now.
Okay, so
Disco Inferno, you know, he's up there getting Disco Inferno on.
So we all agree that for you to be a great, you have to have held and defended a UFC title. But for you to be
No way, dude. Because I still would consider Krokop to be an all-time great, and he may not have
a very good fucking
UFC.
I'd say UFC or Pride.
Okay, Pride's fine. So we can say holding the title or being in a title fight definitely pushes
you. Like, where would you guys put like a guy like Mark Kerr at? I mean, what do you guys think about Mark? I don't know if anybody remembers watching Mark fight, but
I'd put him in pioneer status, but he was a guy that the sport quickly passed by because he refused to get better than anyone.
He could have been so much better, though.
I
really think the biggest thing for him was the drug addiction. That was his biggest downfall.
If you want to look at a successful version of Mark Kerr, you would call him Mark Coleman. That would be a successful version of Mark Coleman. Mark Kerr. Mark Coleman did everything Mark Kush should have done.
Yeah,
and
but
Mark
I, but I think if
in my eyes, is a Hall of Famer.
Was nowhere near the skill set that Mark Kerr was, but he had 1,000 times the work ethic and determination, and that's what really took Mark Coleman so far.
Everybody forgets this. Mark Coleman was an Olympic wrestler. An Olympic wrestler. Olympic. He had pedigree. I think he finished 7th in the Olympics. Mark Kerr didn't have that kind of pedigree. Mark Kerr was a big, strong, the smashing machine, which he was a lot bigger than Mark Coleman was, but he didn't adapt to the stand-up. Baz Rutten got sick of him trying to teach him how to kickbox, and, he had the well-documented history with drugs. But, for me, I look at the two careers, and I see Mark Coleman being one of the greatest all time, and I see Mark Kerr should have been. He should have been
the same
type of fighter that Coleman was.
No, I agree. I agree with you that Coleman is one of the greatest, but I just think that from a pure talent standpoint, that I think that Mark Kerr was blessed with a lot more God-given ability than Mark Coleman.
Yeah, he's a big dude. He's like Brock Lesnar type size.
Yeah, in 1996, with the same kind of athleticism.
That Mark Kerr documentary from years and years ago just breaks my heart, man.
The Smashing
Machine?
To
see someone who's just so physically gifted and someone who's so, you feel like, he did what he did, which was good in the sport at the time, but it just leaves you feeling like he could have been a lot more. Or at least had a chance of being a lot more. It's unfortunate.
If you want to, last I heard, if you want to put a smile on your face to the story, last I heard, Mark Kerr was a very, very successful drug rep, sales rep for a pharmaceutical company. So he turned his affinity for prescription medication around, and last I heard, he was clean and sober and was doing really well for himself in the pharmaceutical industry. So,
I never heard that. Telling me that. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
That's pretty.
Mark Kerr, a lot of people didn't realize this when we watched it. He's a really smart guy. He's a really sharp dude.
Let me throw this out. It comes from one of our team members out in Arkansas, Missouri area, H.R. Baker. He's wondering what everybody's thoughts on Heath Herring. I kind of lean towards, Hall of Fame material. I think Heath was a great, fun, attractive fighter to watch. And I think he didn't get the credit he truly deserved in America, but I wouldn't say great. I wouldn't even say top 10. I'd say he's definitely Hall of Fame material, but that's it.
I think he's a pioneer.
Frank never breaks his back that he is arguably one of the greatest heavyweights ever.
No doubt.
Who?
Frank Mir.
No doubt.
Back before the motorcycle accident, I'd say, but since then he's...
No, that's what I'm saying. If he never has that motorcycle accident, do you think it's at?
A question
for not the greatest, maybe, but one of the greatest, definitely, without a doubt, in my opinion. If he kept improving as quick as he did, especially from seeing how he started and how gifted he was, without a doubt.
You're gonna see a fighter coming along in the next few weeks. I mean, you've already seen him. Everyone already knows who he is. But in my eyes, he's gonna be what Frank Mir should have been, and that's Fabricio Werdum.
Fabricio Werdum has
improved his stand up. That guy, he's probably the most improved heavyweight fighter I've ever seen.
I need to see that because I'm not a big fan of Werdum. I thought it was just a bullshit title fight that they were given. I thought it was just a gimme fight, a payday for fucking Velasquez. I don't know. I'm not very big on Werdum, but it was just a payday for
Velasquez. That man is entertaining too. That's a thing too.
Yeah. He trains right around the corner from my house, so I can literally walk around the street and see him hit pads and stuff at his training center in Venice Beach here, and. He is
he's improved. I don't know him at all. I don't hang out with him or know anybody in his camp, but he has improved tremendously. He's like, when Frank Mir started improving with his hands and started knocking people out, really opened people's eyes to his striking, that's the way Verdum has done for me. He's really opened my eyes to his striking ability in his last few fights. And he actually looks like a striker. He looks like a striker almost. Kind of the way Jacare does.
I love Verdum, but when I hear Verdum's name, I just think of him laying on his back trying to fight Alistair in Strikeforce. I'm like, what are you doing, man?
Get up, bro.
Yeah,
that was before he knew how to throw punches. Everybody thought about Jacare eating a Musashi upkick, but what do they think about him now? He erased 6 years pretty quickly tonight.
Yeah, but Jacare, I think, man, he's no fucking joke, man. I think he's going to be whoever he fights, whether it's Crawford or Weidman, that's going to be a sick fight. And if it's Weidman, that's a fight that I'm about to see, because Weidman is going to take a real good wrestler, but Jacare is going to be able to do that shit too. And standing up today, he looked fucking crazy. He was so nice.
Why does Musashi look like he is just out there sleeping all the time?
I know.
That's
he
is.
He looks good in the
Hey, Mike.
I agree 100%. I can't stand that style.
Hey, Mike, you're getting quiet on your mic.
But he is just so frustrating for me to watch fight because I'm like, dude, quit doing more than snapping a jab out there, man. Like, throw a fucking combo, man. You, like, are one of the most gifted, like, fighters on the planet. Like, I don't really care, like, for people with God-given ability, there's not many people out there with more of that than Gegard Mousasi. And if you don't believe that, just go watch his highlight reel. But he does not fucking use his talent level appropriately.
Exactly. And to all the fighters out there that are listening to this, here's a little bit of advice for you. When you're losing a fight and everybody knows that you're losing a fight and you put your hands down, you keep your hands down at your waist, the way Musashi was, like Skip says, and fire that little jab off, like you're winning the fight and you're fighting nonchalant. The judges actually look at that poorly. They will score that against you. They're going, this guy's losing and he's acting like a jerk. Why won't he engage? And that's exactly what happened with Musashi tonight. If that goes to the judges' scorecard, there might have been a 10-8 round in there.
Yeah, he was losing every round either way. Fucking Jacare just had full control of him against the cage. He was taking him down like clockwork.
There's a part of me that wants Jacare to get his hands on fucking Vitor Belfort. Like, so
I want to see Weidman.
I want Chris Weidman to win. I want Weidman to win that fight, but I would love to just at some point let Jacare get his hands on Belfort, because that's the fight Jacare really wants. And you can tell when he's, like, sitting there giving props to Weidman.
Yeah, but
yeah,
still, I don't know.
Weidman.
I don't know. Weidman, I've seen he's real suspect to me. I think after the fourth round and the fifth round in the fight against Machida, he was so gassed. Like, if Machida would have put it on there, Machida could have walked away to him. But I just seen a lot of holes in his game I never really liked Weidman from the gate. I'm fucking number one Anderson Silva fan all the way. He's the greatest that ever lived. Fucking, he's Bruce Lee to me. And Weidman just fucking killed me that night that he knocked him out. But ever since then, I haven't been big on Weidman. But I've seen a lot of fucking holes in his game versus Machida.
Well, I'll tell you what.
That's the same way I am with Frank Yeager when he hijacked BJ Penn in that first fight, which was total and utter bullshit. And I just was never a big believer in Frankie.
Well, Frank Yeager and Weidman have very similar chins. They can they're like weeble wobbles. They'll wobble, but they won't fall down. You can rock them, but you're not going to get their eyes to roll back in their head. And I got to disagree. I don't think Machida rocked Weidman. I think Weidman gassed.
Well,
yeah,
hey,
no, he was gassed.
I think, yeah.
He was gassed, but if Matita would have put it on there in the fourth or the fifth round when he was gassed, he could have taken advantage of that, and I think he could have walked away as champ. But with Belfort, I just see Belfort having so much more power than anyone in that division. If he catches Weidman clean, then I think it's over.
I see Belfort throwing two punches and then ending up on his back.
Well, hey, guys, I want to
I see Belfort throwing a heel kick and then being on his back.
Hey, I want to welcome one of our old longtime friends. He's always come on the show. One of the best referees I've ever seen. Anthony Hamlet, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm good, man. How you guys doing?
Oh,
great.
Not bad. Hey,
can you hear me better now?
Yeah. Hey, I know we kind of jumped away from it. We talked a little bit earlier about refereeing and some of the issues with it. Dude, I want to jump back for a minute to that subject because we have him on, and everybody saw the fights on the UFC when he reffed them up in Seattle. Dude, how hard is it for you? Because we heard from Jeff. How hard is it for you to determine a flash knockout and a good, solid knockout in that split moment?
I say the same thing all the time. When they hit the ground, if their first motion is to come forward, then they keep fighting. When they hit the ground, they go back and they flop, that's when I stop it. I've always did that, and I've always tried to teach guys behind me to do that.
Okay. Now, other question is, if you're yelling at an opponent to defend himself from ground and pound, per se, and he just throws a thumbs up, is that for you a good enough sign to keep the fight going?
It matters. It matters. I mean, a thumbs up doesn't mean you're not getting your ass whooped and you need to do something, because we're all looking like idiots here. I'm looking like an idiot letting you get your ass whooped, and you look like an idiot letting you get your ass whooped.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, that's the way John told me when I talked to him about the Faber fight. He said, it wasn't John, who was it? I talked to John about the Faber fight, and John said, when a referee says, defend yourself, defend yourself, defend yourself, and you give a thumbs up, he's not asking you if you're okay. He's saying,
no.
Defend yourself. And if you don't do what a ref tells you to do, the fight's over.
Yeah, that's why I like Herb's. I use Herb's command there, where he doesn't tell you to defend yourself. He tells you to fight back. If you're listening to Herb, Herb does not say defend yourself. He tells you to fight back. And I use the same command when I'm reffing, fight back. I don't just defend yourself. That you can cover up and defend yourself. That you can do that all damn day. That is defending yourself. Fight back. Some of you got something in you.
Yeah, but
if you remember, he was in that seatbelt position where he had his hands pulled underneath him, and he couldn't really defend blocking. So he was getting those punches eating. Faber still had all his wits when Burrell was pounding him. But, I mean, he ate 10 or 12 shots in a row without defending himself, without improving or trying to roll out or change position. And the thumbs up wasn't a response that was appropriate.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we got a split second to make a million-dollar decision. That's what I would tell everybody. You know, when we get to the big leagues as refs, we got a split second to make a million-dollar decision, because it is a million-dollar decision. That one loss is big, you know.
What did you think about that Kaiesa stoppage tonight?
Which one?
Michael stoppage.
The Lozon. Lozon.
Everybody's trying to blame Herb. Herb didn't do shit. Herb stepped in, let the doctor look at it. The doctor said the fight's over. It's over. There ain't nothing we can do about it.
Herb's a good ref.
Herb did exactly what he was supposed to do. I mean, Mike's my boy, all the guys in Spokane. I would love to see him. I think if, like Dana said, if that fight was in Vegas, they would have probably still kept fighting. The doctors in Vegas probably would have let him keep going, but they're not quite as knowledgeable up there. So
I didn't see
it was
the
bad.
Cut. Where was it? Where was the cut?
Right on the eyebrow.
Yeah, it was right above the eye.
It was a gash, man.
Was it leaking in or around the eye?
It was not going in the eye. He could have definitely kept fighting for sure, but
so it was leaking around
the
eye.
The doctors, the doctors made that call. Herb didn't.
Once the referee brings the doctor into the cage, he loses decision making.
Yeah, I was, I can't remember, it was Cyborg, I was repping Cyborg up in, that's a Mexican guy out of, his out of Jackson's camp. It was a Strike Force fight, and one of those guys got cut. It was bad, and it was late in the fight, and I'm like, please don't let there be an all, and that's what went through my head. I didn't want there to be a lull in the action where I had to take a stop and take a second to stop and look at that cut, you know? So I, those are the things that go through your mind as a referee too. Just keep fighting so there's no no break.
You son of a bitch! I don't have to do anything. I'm like,
now you know you probably refed one of the craziest fights and you were able to keep it going when a lot of refs would have probably stopped it and turned out to be a fantastic fight when it was all said and done. During that fight, when those guys were getting close to where some refs would have stopped it, when you're at that point in a fight, you know, what are you watching to know that it's okay to let that guy go even though he's getting fucking rocked?
I've been there. I've been there in the room training. I've been there in there with my guys fighting. I've been there. You know, and I tell a lot of these refs, they're learning. I'm like, if you were in that position or if your fighter was in that position, would you want the fight stopped? You know, that's the thing that goes through my mind as a referee is give these guys a chance to fight back. You know, but there's that fine line where it's fighting back and then it's abuse. You know,
and do you have a fine line where you know the accumulation, you know, as the cumulative damage builds up and the guy's still fighting back, is there a point where you're like, just okay, enough's enough. You're not going to win this fight. There's nothing you can do. You get your credit.
I have in the amateurs. I have in the. I have
himself.
I've had made those calls when ref in amateur fights, but not in the pros. Not in the pros. Yours. I mean, as long as you've got some fight left in, you're going to keep fighting. Like I thought the guy that the referee, the Rothwell and Overeem fight, a lot of refs would have let Overeem take a few more, and I thought he made a perfect call.
Oh, I didn't think there was any problem with that call.
No, but a lot of refs would have let him go all the way out where he didn't need to, you know.
My only problem with that fight was having the smallest referee in the crew.
It don't matter.
Be running that. No, but I mean, when you got Big John and Herb, it's kind of hard to throw. What was that? The little guy in there between
Reams.
He was trying to throw over. this done Rothwell.
I told you. I guarantee you I'm a hell of a lot more athletic than most of the big dudes out there.
No, I know. But he couldn't get his arms around his waist to pull him off.
Yeah.
He was like, get off.
Hamlet, are you telling me in a fight that you had no problem double-legging Kovacs to the ground?
I'm definitely going to do what I got to do, man. I'll stop. But you know what? We shouldn't. You seen that topic anyway just recently about referees tackling fighters. We don't need to tackle a fighter. Cover the down fighter. You know, if you
right.
cover the down fighter and the and then what I do is I position myself in between. I cover the down fighter and then I push backwards into the guy who's still attacking. Now, if he continues to attack, then that's completely a whole different story. Then that's when we get into fouls and stuff like that. You know, because he's under the care of the referee at that point.
Yeah, my buddy Mike Beltran said that he'll only try to like use his shoulder to tackle a guy if there's forward momentum. If like the guy rocks him, he falls, the guy falls backwards with his head against the cage and the guy's charging forward to throw that last shot, then he'll lock him up and literally shoot a double on him if he has to, he said. But he said that's just to save a guy from eating a shot when his head's on the canvas.
I'll tell you what, many guys when I first came up, I used to tackle people all the time. And it looks cool, but it's not really good for the fighters because sometimes, remember the one guy that got hurt by Big John, remember that? What's that guy's name? He actually ended up with a disease and pretty much paralyzed later in life.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
What is his name? He actually owned part of AKA at one time. He's part of that whole crew. He was in the early UFCs. Big John broke his nose when he tackled him. He couldn't fight on in the tournament.
When you first started reffing, the guys you hung around with, you had to be physical because those kind of fighters back in the day, you know, the crazy group that you fought with and hung with and stuff, and everybody loves the show knows all the names. And by the way, Jonathan, this is the only guy you'll ever meet who was bitch slapped by Frank Shamrock.
Hey.
But, oh, open palm strike. That's right. Open palm strike. But,
hey,
you know, those guys,
you're right.
Those guys, dude, those guys
well,
back
you
then.
You guys will appreciate You guys will appreciate this, and if you get a chance, go on YouTube and look up Choke Slam Ref James Bruno, my coach from American Top Team. Steve Bruno's brother James is a referee, and he's refereeing a tough man or whatever. He told the guys that these two guys were getting a little too frisky, and he separated them, and the guy didn't like getting separated, so he hit the ref. And James literally picked him up with one hand and choke slammed him to the mat like the Undertaker. It's like one of the funniest things you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Anthony, he hit the referee. He hit the referee.
Nice.
So, Hamlet, what's the deal with all your boys in Spokane getting fucked by the UFC consistently?
Hey, I don't know, man. Not my problem. Not my problem, man. It's just it's the judges, man. It's a rough call, man. I would not want to be a judge, honestly. I would not want that. Because when I look at it, I like pride judging style. I like where a guy can win a fight from the bottom, you know, like Nogueira did against Rico, you know what I mean? So I like that kind of fight.
Yeah, I mean, if guys like Tony Ferguson the other night, on the bottom.
Absolutely. I thought there was
very
no question
active.
In my mind that he won that fight. There was no
yeah.
question in my mind that he won that fight.
Same thing with me. I didn't even think it was a controversy. I was like, when you land 30, 40 blows from the bottom and the guy lands, it's pretty obvious.
You know, one
yeah,
of
course, it's a touchdown scores, but if you don't score it,
who was it that he fought?
Danny Castillo. You know, one
yeah,
of... the craziest fights I've ever refed that a guy won a fight from the bottom was Chris Lieben versus Pat Healy. He was in the FCFF there in Portland. And Pat kept taking, you know, Lieben down. You know how Lieben
Holy
is. He hits you from every
shit.
Angle with every part of his body.
Sorry. I just watched that choke slam by oh, my God, dude. He bitch slammed that dude like a fucking girl on prom night. Then he turned around and threw up his hands and said, let's keep going.
Yeah, then he lets them know, I'm not just a referee. He's like, you guys want to go? Let's go.
He
the guy comes back
the and other fighter, too. I love it, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, that's classic.
Yeah, the Bruno brothers, if I can shout out real quick, especially because it's the anniversary. My coach, Steve Bruno, at American Top Team, was a rescue swimmer in the Navy, and it's actually the anniversary of the day that helicopter he was on crashed, and an Emmy-winning journalist died in the crash, and he had to, like, be saved from the helicopter and had to save a bunch of guys from the helicopter, so he's, like, a real true American hero, and his brother James is the choke slam ref guy, and their brother Mike fights at Titan FC, just lost a tough split decision in Titan. But, yeah, the Brunos, they're all a bunch of badasses, all of them. Even their dad's a big badass.
That's cool.
Yeah, well, check out Choke Slam Referee. It's one of the funniest things you'll ever see. You don't put your hands on the referee, especially an MMA referee. These guys trained, you know?
So,
hey, which one of the Bruno fighters fought Landon Showalter? One of them fought Landon. Do you guys remember which one that was?
Not sure.
It was a 70-pounder. Which one was a 70-pounder?
That's Steve. Steve. Yeah.
Well, speaking of fights that are going down, anybody got a pick on tomorrow's Michelle Waterson fight versus Tamada?
She won it isn't easy. She might even get a TK on the third or fourth round, I think.
Oh.
What weight is that fight at? What weight is that at?
105.
Adam.
That's a,
what's
she's
the name
fighting
of
the girl from Alpha Male, right?
Yeah.
She's fighting
Michelle Waterson?
The girl, yeah, Waterson fighting that girl from Alpha Male, the knockout artist. Right?
Oh, I thought that was Charmaine Tweets fighting the girl from Alpha Male, Veronica Rothenhauser.
Yeah,
Waterson,
that's the one
from Japan. Karate Hottie's fighting the girl from Japan, and Rothenhauser is fighting Charmaine Tweet at 155.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was thinking of Rothenhauser. I'm sorry. It's a completely different weight. My bad.
Dude, she's a beast, man. Rothenhauser is a beast, man. She's got a big overhand right, and if it lands, it could be a quick night.
Yeah, well,
I think she
you're
has
up in Washington.
I think she has 2 8-second KOs.
You guys got, what's her name up in Washington? Amanda Dell, who's a knockout artist.
Dude, yeah, we sponsored her since she was an amateur. She's close. Me and Lepaki have hung out with her, and she's a great young lady. She's got power in those hands. I'll tell you what, after that loss in her first run in the Invitka and then going up to Canada, getting married, fighting Charmaine and losing, she got divorced, moved back to Oregon to Enoch Wilson's Animal House MMA, and she's been on another level. She's training-wise, fight-wise. I can't wait to see the second run at Invitka for her.
I'd like to see her fight. I know it's a big stretch right now, she's not on the same level as far as pedigree and record, but I'd like to see her fight a girl like – I think she'd do really well against Cyborg.
She is – that's the whole reason she joined MMA. She wants that fight one day.
I think she's tailor-made to beat Cyborg.
Dude, she's this girl started out fighting in the amateurs at 180, you know? I mean, and just kept – dude, think about this. She put the first blemish on Jessamine Duke's record as an amateur. Then she came in and took out, Shafir at Chaos at the Casino, which I guarantee you nobody was going to call that fight to go that way. Nobody, not even me. And I love her to death.
I did. I was calling the fight.
Hey, Skip. I got to head out of here, man. I'll catch up with you guys.
Okay. Later, brother.
All right, buddy.
Later, Hammer.
I'm talking about the first round KO.
I was commentating that night. It took all the air out of the building. Everybody left. It was crazy. Absolutely
really?
Crazy. Changed the mood of the entire night.
You've probably seen more of Shafir's fights than we have in person. Do you think she's legit, or has she been kind of coddled to get to where she's at?
Marina?
Yeah.
Oh, Marina's legit. Yeah. Marina, she got caught, and it's MMA. You wear 4 ounce gloves. Any weight class, you get caught, you go down. Amateur, pro, whatever, you do not get the type of pedigree that she has. You do not get the amount of people talking about you that she has just because she hangs out with Ronda Rousey. You know, she's legit. I've seen her train. I know
that.
I think Marina needs to change her. If I was in charge, and I'm not, but I think that a change of scenery is necessary. Not because that camp doesn't work. I just think that, and as a fighter, you don't want to ever get comfortable. I think you want to be in uncomfortable situations when you're training, because that's what you're training for, is uncomfortable situations.
I agree with you. I think Baszler needs to go back to with Josh 100%, and I think Jessamine needs to go back to somewhere where she can utilize her Muay Thai a lot better. I mean, I really think that camp is cradle is perfect to make Ronda better, but the supporting cast isn't really getting better, and it's kind of like the Black Zillions had a really bad run, and right now that camp is having a really rough run. Jessamine's dropped 2 straight. Shanna's lost again. Marina just got took her loss. I mean, really, the only person winning there is Ronda right now.
Yeah, Ronda and Jemima. And there's literally six women that train there. It's kind of hard to get, you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Like, I came from a camp, like, when I started training when I moved out here, I came from American Top Team. When I would walk into my Muay Thai class, I was in a Muay Thai class with 30 people. And then I come out here, and there's not 30 people in the gym, and they want double the money every month. I was like, what the hell? You know what I mean? So when you're in a huge gym like American Top Team, you can fucking fight 300 different people and train 300 different people. When you're fighting 1 of 6, you get comfortable real quick. So, yeah, you can – if you're fighting Shayna Baszler, or, for example, yeah, she's going to get real good at taking you down because she knows how to take you down. But what's going to happen when she goes up against someone that knows how to do takedown defense better than you? She doesn't have that option in that camp because that person's not there. There's only six people there. That's the only thing. That's my only knock on GFC is it's a very intimate group. It's a small group. They have the coaches that can do it. I mean, if you've ever sat down and talked to Edmund Tervurdian, the guy's a genius when it comes to striking. Literally a genius. Like, just the way he talks about the movement of the body and delivering of punches. Very, very intelligent striking coach. Their wrestling coach is like one of the best wrestlers ever, Olympic wrestler. Can't remember his name. So, they have the coaches and the facilities. It's just they don't have a lot of people, you know. And it's kind of tough to make a small camp like that the primary camp for a big fight camp, you know. And I think that eventually you're going to see Ronda training, you know. That's why Ronda trains a lot with the Gracies, and Ronda does a lot of cross training, you know. Shayna was training with Josh. She was training a lot with Josh. But, you know, she does
really
striking. Yeah, she was training with Josh as well. I was trying to get her to book on the show, and the show couldn't change the schedule, and it conflicted with her practice with Josh, which she wasn't going to miss.
I just really think that's such a better fit for her in her style of grappling. I don't think that down there at Glendale is the right spot for Shane at all.
Well, I see, that fight just perplexed me because the first round in my eyes was almost a 10-8 round for Shayna. I mean, she dominated everything, took her down, put her in every position. Every time Cohesia rolled or tried to transition, Shayna had an answer. And then for some reason in the second round, she decided to stand with her. I just didn't understand. I mean, I always wonder why fighters don't stick with success. Success should trump your game planning every time.
Can you do me a favor and call
Does anybody really think that Besh does anybody think that Besh really has any chance, a snowball's chance in a microwave against Ronda?
Not today.
I mean, a legitimate chance to beat her other than catching her on a knockout right now. I don't know. I've seen enough from her to say that she's ready to deal with Ronda's ground game with striking involved. You know, so I think Ronda has gotten some lucky breaks and some fights, you know, with the liver shot and stuff. I think it was perfectly placed, you know. I mean, yeah, was she exactly aiming for that specific shot, thinking in her head, I'm going to take her out right now with a liver shot? No, but she got the victories and she got them impressively, but I still think Ronda's hands are her weak point, and I think if somebody can keep her from taking her down and box her, she loses.
Oh, yeah, her stand-up's weak, but it's just she's got, like, fucking this man strength, dude. It's, like, crazy. Compared to these females, it's like putting a female in against Brock Lesnar. It's crazy. She's fucking strong as fuck.
I don't think her hands are weak. I don't. I think her
dude,
hands
she
are
fucking
very
blasted Alexis Davis.
Well, it's
she
not that her hands are weak. Her hands are getting better and better and better. And I'll tell you, I'll tell you how someone's going to beat Ronda Rousey. Someone's going to beat Ronda Rousey the same exact way, and you guys are going to laugh at me and you think I'm stupid, but someone's going to beat Ronda Rousey the same way that someone beat Mike Tyson. The first person that Ronda Rousey isn't able to beat before the fight starts is really going to give her trouble. I mean, look at the past few fights. I mean, Miesha Tate skipping to the ring to freaking to. You're gonna hear me roar! Come on, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That's no. Look back when Buster Douglas fighting Mike Tyson, walked to the ring without like this scowl on his face. Like I remember watching that fight, going like, this guy's not scared. This guy's gonna make a difference. He's not scared. This is gonna be a fun fight, you know. And every single person that fights Ronda comes to the ring, and the fight's already over.
even Davis, even Kaufman, all of them, Carmouche, they come to the fight. Carmouche is the only one that I thought actually was going to give her a run.
Oh, no, I think Jessica Eye is going to be, that'll be a good fight, too.
Yeah, but aren't they, it's Jessica Penn, I'd say.
I honestly, I thought Sarah McMahon was the girl to beat her in her old game on the ground.
No way, dude.
Women, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, dude. Women, elite-level women's judo is far superior to elite women's wrestling. I don't care what anybody thinks. It may be different in the men's world, but in the women's world, there are far superior judo practitioners around the world than there are female wrestlers.
I think you can say it like this. I would say elite female wrestling sets up the finish. Elite female judo, you land in the finish. So there is, like, when Ronda connects her hips and someone goes for a ride, you lose your breath when your friggin' back hits the mat. That shit. And she lands in a dominant position. You have half a second to react, and she's already got you mounted.
She lands them with so much force, dude. It's so much power coming from those hips that when they hit the ground, they're fucking pretty much in shock, dude. It's like a fish out of water.
It's like getting punched in the stomach.
Yeah, and then it's just so much power. I can't believe how much power that girl has. It's ridiculous. With the judo throws and on top of that, it's the arm bars. It's like, what the fuck, dude? Nobody. It's like as soon as she grabs that arm, it's like, I'm telling you, it's like a man versus a woman. That's what it seems like to me. Every time I see Ronda fight anyone, it's like, you know, there's some fights where I see where, you know, at the beginning of the fight, I'm like, this might be a good fight, you know. She might give Ronda, a run for her money. And 2 minutes into the fight, well, I go to take a piss and I come back and Ronda's sitting there with the belt around her waist and her hand raised. I'm, what the fuck happened, dude?
Yeah, she's one of a kind. She's one hell of an athlete. And I don't know if you could say it's hurt so much her being better than everyone else or if there's that much lacking in the
competition behind her. But can you honestly say, can anybody here honestly, and I want you to convince me if you say yes, can you honestly say she's top 5 pound-for-pound fighter in the world?
No.
See, this
nope.
This is why I have a problem with that.
I don't think she's top 5.
There's a men's division that's 135 pounds, and she wouldn't beat anyone in the UFC 135-pound men's division.
I think there's some guys there that she would really.
Not
yeah,
in UFC.
I like her.
I don't think so. Not in UFC.
I think that
Anthony
I
Burchett
think
versus
is.
Ronda Rousey. Who wins?
Anthony Burchett.
Yeah.
Those fights have to start on the feet. She's got to connect her hips, and he's going to make her pay. You know what I mean? So like, I have a hard time giving
like
her a pound for pound credit because there are guys at her weight class that are better than her.
Pound for pound, it's just, yeah, but it's guys. That's the difference. They're guys. She's a female. So it's like either way, in the UFC, that'll never happen. It'll never be a female versus a male. And
well, what I'm saying is
when we're talking
pound
for pound,
female
when we're talking
male.
Pound for pound, yeah. Well, yeah, that's what it should be, though, now. That's what it should be, I think. If this is how
it's
like, you know,
the pound for pound fighter on the planet. That's what it is. It's pound for pound fighter, not male, not female.
Yeah, but
well, how can you say she's pound for pound if she couldn't beat Jared Papazian at 135? Is Jared Papazian
pound for pound is kind of bullshit because at the end of the day, I don't care how good Demetrius Johnson is, he's never going to beat Alistair Overeem.
Oh, but
never.
Demetrius
never.
Is a fucking
never.
Yeah, but it's
and he's never
know,
beat
actually, pound the way it works.
The
way
it works,
I don't
know, because I have Demetrius Johnson as my number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world.
No way. DeMarte,
Wolf
Pena beats him.
No.
Yes.
Who?
DeMarte, the Wolf Pena, the number one 125.
He's not beating Demetrius, dude.
Yes, he is. Yep. He's beating the brakes off him.
No way. Lost your fucking mind.
Dude, no. Hey, I'm telling you, after what he did in both weight classes, I'm saying he's 125. He beats Demetrius.
Who are you talking
Demetrius
about?
Demetrius Johnson is one of the toughest fighters in the world, I think.
No, he's a monster, but
I have Demetrius as four. I have Demetrius as number four, pound for pound.
I have
and
him
I
as,
really just think that there's nobody that's ahead of John Jones. There's nobody
yeah, no,
ahead
John,
of John Jones.
No, John Jones is number one to me. Number two is Jose Aldo, because Aldo, people
yes.
could say what they want about him, but it's just a simple fact that since WEC, he's fucking demolished anyone that stepped in his way. Like, I will never forget that Cub Swanson fight, and Cub Swanson is a monster. There's a lot of monsters in that division that fucking Jose Aldo has just ran through. And it's like Uriah Faber, one of my favorite fighters of all time. And it's like, look what he did to his legs, man. Those leg kicks are fucking
vicious. I have one that's
going to
piss everybody off. I still have Dominic Cruz, number four.
Dominic
pound
Cruz is
for
like,
pound.
People
pound
sleep
for
on
pound.
Him, dude.
Number
that's
four.
Injury, though. That's injury. It's not like he lost a fight where he gets off the top of pound for pound. It's, you know, he couldn't fight due to injury. And still, before that injury happened, he was top five pound for pound, hands down.
I have him top five pound for pound still. I have him four. I have Kane two. I have Kane three, Aldo two.
I can't believe they're putting him on. He's on an undercard.
I got
even on the prelims?
Four and I got Kane at three and Demetrius at four with Aldo at two and Jones at one.
See,
yeah,
Kane,
I have Jones at five.
Jones at five?
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Wow.
That's craziness.
I got wide.
I had Jones losing the fight to Alexander Gustafsson by a big margin. When I look at his last fight, his last fight really knocked him off that pedestal for me, because even though he got the W in the win column, in my scorecard watching at home, he lost by 3 points. By 3 points.
His last fight was against Glover.
Oh, not his last fight. I mean, against
Gustafsson.
And against Glover, I expected him to do what he did against Glover. I didn't think Glover was going to give him a problem.
No, but see, I thought, who is it, too?
Why
do
people
what do you guys
going to give him a problem?
What
is it to tell people Cormier is going to give him a problem?
Oh, Cormier ain't going to do shit. I was on this show. I was on here about, what, like 2 weeks ago talking about the same shit. And Cormier is a bitch. I don't like Cormier at all. I fucking can't stand that fucking dude.
I'll tell you why it's gonna matter.
It's not,
because
Jones is just going to fucking stand back.
You're talking about a high school wrestler who placed fourth in the States against an Olympic wrestler. Daniel Cormier will be able to take John Jones down at will. At will.
No way, dude.
There's nothing.
No
there's
way.
Nothing John Jones can do about
dude,
Daniel Cormier
John,
taking
John
him
Jones
down.
Was a national champion at Central Iowa.
No,
as
a Division I double
that's
A
like one
school.
Of the premier,
yeah.
That's like one. Yeah, but I don't really care. That's one of the premier. I will put that school up against a lot of schools in the Pac-12. In the Big 12, that fucking place is a breeding ground for fucking gangster wrestlers. I mean, look at
Daniel
up there.
You don't get to Daniel Cormier. John Jones couldn't touch Daniel Cormier's wrestling shoes with all of his accolades.
Yeah, that's wrestling, though. We're talking about MMA here. And Daniel Cormier ain't going to get in.
Henderson got schooled.
Yeah.
Here's the point that I'm trying to make. We're not talking about Henry Cejudo here, who hasn't learned how to transition the wrestling game into MMA yet. We're talking about Daniel Cormier, who, like Skip just said, took Dan Henderson by his hips, okay? Not
yeah,
by his legs.
Dan Henderson
took Dan Henderson by his hips.
Daniel Cormier in his prime.
Dude, 40-year-old
Daniel
Henderson
Cormier
is still one of the best takedown defenses in the world.
If Daniel Cormier fought a 2003,
you're crazy.
He would get the fucking brakes beat off of him. If he fought Dan Henderson in Dan Henderson's fucking prime, Daniel Cormier is going to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
And
but
that's possible.
That's very possible. And it's also very possible that Dan Henderson sits underneath Dan Cormier for five rounds and loses a decision.
Look, is it okay, not me?
Okay, but now
Cormier's the Ben Askren of 205. If he gets to John Jones, he's taking him down. I can't disagree with that. But my question is, can he get to John Jones with those oblique kicks? The front snap
Not. He's not going to get anywhere close to Jones. Jones is going to keep distance and just fucking pound on his face. That's how it's going to happen. Cormier's real small, too, man. He's only, about 5'10"? 5'11"? Tops?
5'11"?
Yeah, exactly. 5'11". Yeah, Jones is fucking
why he's disadvantaged.
Jones is going to go to Cormier, and Cormier's going to put him on his back.
And the only that's the only way that I see anyone beating Jones is someone that's around his size. If they're 6'4", 6'5", and they have that reach like Jones, then Jones doesn't have that advantage, and that's his advantage in every fight. Pretty much, he keeps people at distance,
and especially someone like Cormier, if he keeps him at distance, Cormier has I don't see him doing anything. You know, he's got power in his punches, but he's not going to touch Jones. He might get him a few times, but he's not going to connect with him good, and he's not going to be able to get in with that takedown. Yeah, he might get one or two in the fight, but that's it. I don't see him keeping Jones down on the floor. It's not happening. It's not.
I think the oblique
Jones has a 12-inch reach advantage. 12 fucking inches.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
on this guy.
But the oblique kick is what I think is going to play a big role.
He can't use the kicks in this fight, though. That is the tricky part
here. He can, because that is a low kick.
No, he can't.
Where's the fight? Where's the fight taking place?
Snap that leg up. Las Vegas.
It's in Las Vegas, so he can use the oblique kicks, because if it's in California, he's not allowed to use them.
But it's not. You don't really want him to keep putting the leg out there against the
that's the only leg kick you want to use on a wrestler. You don't want to commit to an inside or an outside leg kick, because he'll just snack it and pull it to his hip and drive through on a single leg. If you use that oblique kick, that's the hardest kick to catch and take down, because it's a front kick. It's not.
Yeah, but still,
you don't have to swivel with your hips. It's very hard to catch. It's very hard to catch a heel in front of you and parlay that into a takedown when a guy's trying to spin out of it. You can just spin out of it very easy.
And also, look at fucking don't forget, Ryan Bader is a real good wrestler, too. Ryan Bader he's a good wrestler. And, Jones ran through him. Jones ran right through him.
Yeah, but
and the takedowns
Bader,
wasn't a factor in that fight.
Ryan Bader and Daniel Cormier are different level wrestling.
No, they are, but, there was a lot of hype behind Bader at that time, too. When Bader and Jones fought, there was a lot of hype behind him, and he's a great wrestler, and he didn't have no chance on Jones with takedowns or anything. And I just feel like...
Yeah, but Bader will never be better than a 6'7 or 8 ever. He's a 6'7, 8 guy at best.
Yeah, but, dude, I also think that John Jones has a far better pedigree than Daniel Cormier in MMA.
Yeah, but look what happened in his last fight in Strikeforce. Daniel Cormier, everybody thought, was going to pick up Josh Barnett, put him on his back, and sit on him for three rounds. And what did he do? He picked him apart three rounds. Picked him apart. A guy with a much longer reach. What was it, 9-inch reach advantage?
Yeah, but
he picked
Josh
him
Barnett.
Apart.
Josh Barnett's
Josh
no John Jones.
He's nowhere
near the striker John Jones is. Nowhere
he's
near.
Right, and Daniel Cormier is nowhere near the Daniel Cormier that fought Josh Barnett.
And no matter how much Luke Rockhold...
I'm just saying he can strike with the taller guys.
But Luke Rockhold can't impersonate John Jones. There's nobody you can bring in to impersonate this guy. Nobody.
No. And even,
if you know Reese Andy or Andy Reisty, maybe. I mean, that's about the closest type of striking you're going to see to John Jones is Andy Reisty.
Oh, no. What about, fucking Christ, I can't think of his name. Eves,
Leo McGeary.
Yeah.
Leo McGeary.
I don't know.
The Bellator version of John Jones.
Yeah. But what was I saying?
I think it's going to be a really good fighter.
No,
I was
like
really
too,
pissed.
Man. He's a beast.
Yeah.
I was really pissed when fucking when they canceled the Jones, when the Jones fight got canceled. I thought the 178 card was going to be a joke, but they got a lot of good fucking fights on that card. They stacked that card up.
It still was a joke. Joe Soto just fought my friend Tyrion Ware 3 weeks ago, and Tyrion Ware almost knocked him out. I don't understand how he gets a title fight out of that.
I watched that fight, and I agree. Look, I'm going to say right now, I said it the other night, if you're going to replace that fight, a guy who just recently vacated his title, who legitimately has fought UFC fighters that you hired after he beat, should have gotten the shot. I, first of all, would have canceled the fight till next week and put it on tonight in Connecticut and said, look, because he was not medically suspended. If you look at the list, he was not medically suspended. So you could have moved the fight back a week. But that being said...
They couldn't do that because of the network. The network had paid... The pay-per-view had paid for, was paid for a title fight, which is different pay structure for all the commission, judges, and everything. So they had to do that. I understand that. But they could have done a five-round non-title and just paid everybody. But they didn't want to pay everybody for a title fight unless they were getting title fight bang. So instead, they forced the title fight down our throats, and it was the bullshit move. What they should have done was Joe Soto, five rounds, TJ Dillashaw, non-title event. And I would have been fine with that. No
problem.
Well,
why not Burchak over Soto?
Joe Soto's a former Bellator champion, and if Tyrion had made weight...
Joe Soto was never a champion?
Yes, he was.
Tournament.
Yeah,
tournament.
He was.
He was a tournament champion, yes.
Oh, tournament champion. I was like, no, because he got knocked the fuck out by Joe Warren.
Yeah, he was a tournament champion.
Yeah, but he's not. He wasn't a champion.
He was.
No,
he was going to be
the
winner champion.
Burchak just gave up his title to come to fight in the UFC, so he's currently a champ.
Yeah,
when
he
got to the doors.
He was a Tachi Palace title. I mean,
Burchak doesn't have the pedigree that Soto does. He hasn't been what the names that Soto has. And Burchak's a great young fighter. Soto's kind of a veteran, so they gave it to the veteran. I thought they should have given Scotty Jorgensen a shot.
Jorgensen.
He was 10 pounds underweight because he was fighting at 125, so that probably wouldn't have worked. I thought Dwayne Bang Ludwig had the right idea when he said five rounds non-title is what it should be. And I think that's fine. I think it's kind of hard to justify if Joe Soto wins him being a world champion. And I'm not trying to say anything bad about Joe Soto. He's a good fighter. He beat a very, very, very good fighter in Tyrion Ware. But Tyrion Ware did more damage to Joe Soto's face than
TJ Dillashaw did.
What do you guys think about the fucking Dustin Poirier fight?
I think Dustin Poirier.
Oh my God. I'd like him winning that fight. How do you say his last name? Conor
McGregor.
McGregor.
Yep. I see Poirier grinding out a decision in that fight.
It's gonna be an entertaining fight,
dude. I am just sold on Conor McGregor, man. I've been sold on him since he was at Cage Warriors. And he was the lightweight and featherweight champion over there. I mean, dude, I really think that kid is the real deal. And the fight to make right now at 145 after he beats Poirier is Aldo.
If he beats
Poirier, yeah, I agree. He has to fight Aldo next.
But, like, I like him, too. Don't get me wrong.
I think Poirier
coming out on top,
dude. I think that Conor has really valid points when he talks about Poirier. You know, he gets rocked a lot, man, and that's not going to work against a guy like Conor.
He's got rocked a lot, but who has he been? Has he been knocked? I haven't seen him been knocked out recently.
Well, I'll tell you what,
Conor,
guy.
Man.
Go ahead.
Oh, when I seen Conor fight, I like Max Holloway, too. I think he's fucking – Max Holloway's going to be up
Max
and coming. I think
he's
– yeah, but
he's
Conor
future,
just fucking – dude, Conor ran through him, man. When I seen that, I was there for that fight, and Conor fucking ran through him. I made light work of him.
I just – I don't –
don't. I think Conor McGregor will be defined when he faces adversity inside the cage. Until then, I'm not sold on. I'm not sold on any fighter built on hype until I see him in a tough position.
Mm-hmm.
Bound to happen. Roger Huerta. There you go. Anyone else? I can name 1,000 if you want me to. I want to see you in a tough position before I'm sold that you're going to be great. You know? It's just what happened to Brock Lesnar in his first tough situation.
Yeah, but Brock, I don't know. I think things would have went different for Brock if he didn't get in, if that fucking he didn't get sick like that.
I think he'd have been better off using Shane Carwin as an example there.
Yeah, Shane Carwin fell off fucking big time.
Yeah, well, Shane got hurt too, you know.
Well, what about even Tim Sylvia, you could say, man. He fucking fell off.
Absolutely.
No,
dude,
the king of all fall-offs is Brandon Vera.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I had high hopes for him.
That dude.
Why? I thought he did really well against Shogun. That was like one of his best fights ever.
Oh yeah, but before that he was just fucking on a skid, and now he's non-existent.
He's in 1FC now. Yeah.
Well, hey, folks, everybody, I want to tell all you guys, I want to thank you guys for joining tonight, man. Like everybody knows, we do this every Friday night. I want to thank the Clinch Report. Jonathan, thank you so much for kicking it. Mike, I appreciate it. MMA Beatdown, MMA Topics, MMA Madhouse, Clinch Custom Mouth Guards. Everybody, thank you guys. You know how we end every show. Eagle!
Osprey.
Well, I ain't got no money, but I am doing fine. I'm just a hillbilly hellraiser. I'm trying to kill my time, and I'm looking for that gal about 5'10", and I'm gonna take her down that road of living. Because I'm drinking, drugging, I'm having lots of fun. I always carry around my loaded shotgun. If I think I'm gonna have a bad time, I got a little bit of smoke and a whole lot.